Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. Priya Guns is an actor, activist, and now an author. Her debut novel, Your Driver is Waiting, captures all of that. Born in Sri Lanka and raised in Toronto, Priya's book is a powerful and propulsive social satire. The protagonist is a queer Tamil woman named Damani. She cares for her ailing mother and moonlights as an underpaid driver for an Uber-like company. If you're getting kind of a taxi driver vibe right now, congratulations, you are well on the case. Priya's a big fan of Martin Scorsese's movie and Robert De Niro's performance as Travis Bickle. Priya joins us now to talk about Your Driver is Waiting and why Domini, like Travis, is sorting things out behind the wheel.
She works for a rideshare driver. You learn in the novel that her father has recently passed away. So she's sort of forced to take more care of her mom, who suddenly has fallen into a serious state of depression and can no longer move. And so this has put a lot of stress on her own finances and reckoning with being at home with her mom. And so she has the stress of being a carer, but also in the city where she lives, it's just exploded with all kinds of protests.
Mm-hmm. And you make a point of not saying which city she's in so that it gives it kind of a universal quality, right?
Exactly. And I'm very much a believer in universalism in the specific, but I made that active choice inspired by different cities that I've lived in and inspired by the protests that I've happened to see or be a part of in some way. So that's from experiencing living in Istanbul and experiencing Gezi protests in 2013. I was very inspired by Thawra, so the uprising we saw in Beirut, Lebanon at the end of 2019. And then, of course, being Tamil, one significant protest that I remember was in 2009 as Tamil people and others gathered in Toronto and in big cities around the world calling for a ceasefire against the genocide of Tamils. So yeah, kind of seeing how what people were demanding and how people have come together. And I mean, these are just some protests that have inspired the foundation of the city in which this novel takes place, but seeing ultimately that people have gathered angry against something that has to do with the capitalist system and exploitation of workers.
Mm-hmm. Very well said. Yeah. Have you yourself worked as a rideshare driver?
So this is funny. I don't have my driver's license. I've moved around so much. I can drive. I've driven. I could drive a manual car. While writing this novel, I took lessons. And it was really funny because I'd have my driving instructor say things like, oh, yeah, you need to think about how your character might drive. Focus on the road. And I'm like, no, actually, she's a little unhinged. So I've never driven as a rideshare driver or with people in the car.
Yeah. That's very interesting because you did really good research because, you know, I could have sworn that you had experience.
I remember what I wanted to do is I wanted to sit in a few people's cars, but it was during COVID and we were in lockdown. So I couldn't. I did know some drivers and my partner, he was a driver and he's from a family of drivers. So, I mean, this is many years of talking about the industry, talking about the shift from, you know, the taxi industry and then rideshare. And traveling, and I mean, immediately just having that connection, being very interested in taxi drivers and drivers and what the situation is like, knowing how the likes of Uber, Lyft, and whatnot have affected local companies.
You've said that you really get to know characters better in novels compared to television or film. I'm curious, how much do you draw on your acting experience to develop and inhabit your characters?
So I initially started taking acting training to help understand dialogue in the context of a novel or in the form of a novel. And I fell in love with acting from doing that. I feel like for me, the things that I've learned taking acting training and from doing drama in school and what is required to understand a character for me is how I understand a character and how I begin to write in that voice. So, and I do it, I've kind of, upon reflection, I've realized, you know, I was dressing like I would think, I thought Domini would dress. The way I was speaking was very different. And that's because you're, as writing first person, the voice is constantly on until it's off. And I remember when I submitted the final draft, feeling like my shoulders, just having the sense of relief because, oh, I feel like myself again. I know maybe that sounds a bit odd, but that's how it worked for this particular novel for me.
Mm. You have an epigraph from A. Sivanandan. Can you share it with us and tell us why you chose this quote?
Absolutely. If those who have do not give, those who haven't must take. Sivanandan for me is a very inspiring thinker, and he's passed. But I really wanted to set the tone. And I know with fiction, as writers, we can only do so much to guide our readers towards how we wish our work can be interpreted, if even we understand what it is that we've written. And I had this written on a post-it for myself as well, to remind myself of what I wanted to say without actually saying so.
Mm-hmm. It's a great quote because it really addresses one of your themes in the book, is the income inequality, which is rampant all over the world these days. I think that the relationship between Domini and her mother, Amma, plays an important part in the development of Domini's character. Did you write their scenes together in a different way from the way you wrote the rest of the book?
I wrote it, with a lot of tenderness. There are scenes that are quite explicit, and Domini really exhibits her rage. And those scenes were very important to me. I wanted to give her that outlet, however absurd and, you know, controversial perhaps what she does to her mother is. But I think I was touching on experiences that are very real to a lot of people, being first generation, second generation, or a carer. When you are in a position where you are caring for someone who is helpless and incapable at that time to care for themselves, it comes with a lot of emotional strain, even physical. One of the reasons Domini decides to take up weight training is because she realized when my mother needed me, I wasn't able to be there. I couldn't physically lift her up. And I tried really hard to write those scenes with as much tenderness as I think they're owed.
Yeah, and you succeeded. They're very tender, and that's what those really resonated with me, as did the whole book. So, yeah, you did a great job with that. You are tackling a lot of big ideas like capitalism, racial discrimination, and the class system. How did you manage to pull that off? Did you know you were going to write about such big ideas, or did it kind of happen as you were writing?
I think I sort of knew it was going to happen, but also, I mean, that's just how I view the world. We're living in a capitalist system. I grew up very working class. I grew up very angry, and I am a racialized person. And that's not to say if you are a racialized person, you are going to have class consciousness. No, I don't necessarily agree with that, but I think you're able to empathize and understand. You know, I've had a lot of conversations with activist friends and artist friends about the intention we put behind our work. You know, you can set your intentions, but what ultimately happens when you let go a bit and, you know, let art be art, you kind of lose control. And having these conversations of, okay, but if I am the person I am, is that going to reflect through my work naturally? Or is that something you have to try and craft and sculpt? I don't know. But I mean, for me, through my lens and seeing the world and understanding it very intimately, that there are people who have and there are people who have not, I don't think I can escape particular themes at this point.
Mm-hmm. The major turning point in your story is when Domini gives a ride to Jolene. Jolene is not the kind of girl Domini usually dates. Can you tell us about their relationship?
There's a lot of lust. Their conversation at times is very cringy. It's very strange. I mean, writing it, I was just like, okay, let's go there. Their main difference is not racial. It's about class and position. And Jolene is, you know, well-meaning in her activism. She wants to do the right thing. But in wanting to do the right thing, she's not really thinking about the people who are most affected by whatever it is she's trying to protect or save.
Mm-hmm. Just a little aside, I'm just curious, is Jolene, did you name her after the Dolly Parton song?
It wasn't necessarily named after Jolene in the song, but mm-hmm. I do love the song, and that sort of happened. And so writing her, that was playing in the background.
Oh, yeah, that's great. Yeah, it's a great song, and Dolly Parton's great. Yeah. One of the most intriguing settings in your novel is a place called Doo-Wop. Can you tell us about Doo-Wop?
Doo-Wop was very important to me. I think in writing this novel where I was exaggerating some of the things that we're seeing in our current times and critiquing it in my own little way, I think it was only fair to offer some sort of alternative. And doo-wop for me was the antithesis of this unnamed city, even though it was in the city. It was a possibility. It's something that we do have. It exists every day in different cities and countries, and I've seen it. But I really wanted to show what it could look like, what a place could look like with people who come from all walks of life, who are coming to make each other's lives much better, who are organizing and helping each other. How does that exist within a city? And what would it look like? What would it feel like? People come at the end of the day, there's drinks, you know, some guys selling cigars out, they're sat outside and they're talking. A lot of what I saw in Gezi and in Beirut during the uprising as well, and what we know even from the Occupy movement of how people wanted to act what it was they hoped to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And it's this utopian community. And you've said that you're really interested in the idea of reimagining possibilities, reimagining how we protest, what direct action can be and what we do about it. And it would be nice to see more doo-wops spring up, wouldn't it?
It would. It would feel very nice to feel comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If I'm not mistaken, there are a few references to Martin Scorsese's Taxi Driver in your novel. How much of an influence was Taxi Driver on you?
It was a huge influence. Like, I found out I have ADHD. So now I know that, yes, when I manage to watch a film from beginning to end, it's one of my favorites. Taxi Driver was one of those films. There's much to critique, but there's also so much to praise. It's a classic film. Thinking about Travis Bickle and thinking about Domini, connecting to his alienation and his rage and finding how it was misplaced. Thinking about reimagining a character, a taxi driver or rideshare driver, and what her rage would be and where her alienation would come from and how it would look. Even though she has lots of friends, she's still dealing. She's alienated and she's isolated. Rideshare drivers, there is no workplace, you know, when you're a gig worker. The actual beats in the film and particular moments, I went back to that a lot. I'm very inspired by films that I do love and the way that when I write, I'm seeing a scene played out.
Yeah, and I think especially of the scenes where Domini is talking to herself in the mirror, and also when she gets the wild haircut that's reminiscent of Travis Bickle getting the mohawk. You've seen Taxi Driver several times, I believe. How does it change as you, like, every time you watch it, do you get something different out of it?
I think I fall in love with Robert De Niro a little more each time and just how well he played Travis. I think his performance was brilliant. In terms of the writing, yeah, that's always fascinating. But I think I haven't seen it in a while now. And I've seen it many times, especially while writing and before writing. It's his performance and it's just stellar. I think he does it brilliantly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree. And Scorsese, of course, does a great job directing. And the Bernard Herrmann score doesn't hurt either. What was the biggest challenge you faced in writing Your Driver is Waiting?
I really wanted to serve every character in the best way possible. I wanted to do them justice, particularly Jolene. I didn't want to make her a caricature, but I also wanted to poke fun at liberalism and performative activism. And I think finding a balance between deciding what parts of a character I want to exaggerate and what parts I wanted to stay very true, that was very important to me. I think the hardest part was conceptualizing Jolene, and my editors really helped with that.
Yeah, you did a great job with all the characters. All of the characters are very fully developed and very, you know, have more than one dimension. They're really well done. That's one of the strengths, maybe the big strength of your book. Priya Guns, thank you very much for joining us. Congratulations on Your Driver is Waiting. I'm looking forward to the movie adaptation and you starring as Domini. Priya Guns is the author of Your Driver is Waiting. Find out more at wpr.org/beta. Well, that does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, Ed Zwick, Lori Kilmartin, and Priya Guns.
They have a lot of zany stuff on this program, don't you think?
Beta is available to follow on Spotify or wherever you catch your favorite pods. And you can keep up with us during the week online at WPR.org/beta.
Even for the internet, it's pretty shocking.
Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions.
Fantastic.
Our technical director and producer is Steve Gotcher.
I think it was the bear's voice you heard deep inside him.
Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich.
He was a rock they broke themselves against.
And thanks to you, our alphas. More Beta comes your way next week. Until then, I'm Doug Gordon.
He had always lived in the borderland anyway, somewhere between this world and the other.